This is a production of Cornell University.
Good evening, everyone. It is 5:32. We'll call the meeting to order. Let's see. We'll start off with introduction of voting members. So, let's see, David Bump. Anne?
Here.
Michaela?
Here.
Matt?
Here.
Giovanna?
Here.
John?
Here.
Franny?
Here.
Serena?
Here.
Asma? Elizabeth Moran. Elizabeth Weaver.
Here.
Adrian Powell.
Here.
Stephanie.
Here.
Sid. Oh, sorry. That should be Kirstie.
Here.
Okay. And Ian.
Yep.
Tim.
Here.
And Simon.
Here.
Okay.
David's here.
Okay, David is here now. Okay, so we'll approve the minutes next. So are there any corrections to the minutes that's printed? Okay, yes, Ian.
Of getting to get the parent and kind of adapting to life
the thought that we are so focused on way of life that we're not pulling apart, but we are still put together by a student partner named Nicole P. Okay, so we set up a register for student partners and a hand card I'm passing around. We're trying to make more active presence at all the orientation phase. And we're always working on funding, and the Child Care Grant Program is one of the few resources that student parents have, and so we want to keep that going as even much funding available. So as I said, the reason I'm here today is that I'm putting together a focus group aimed at student parents. And I think the description, it's not really necessary, I'm going to read it out anyway, so don't worry. Alright, so an ongoing challenge is giving a strategy that would address the specific challenges of graduate students and families that would take into account a range of experiences. So what we're trying to do is to find one thing that would help all student parents, or at least as many of them as possible, while taking into account that this varies by field, by the age of children, and by the stage of the program that you are, by your household support, by your family support, and these are requirements. So we really want to kind of take many student parents together, ask some questions, and see what the best way of moving forward might be. So I put together an email with a description, and I really appreciate it if this could be kind of dispersed as widely as possible to as many people. Ryan will forward it out to everyone after the weekend. It's really short, really simple. So the thing that we're hosting the first group of student parents, it's at lunchtime. So it's a time slot where your parents connect to the game, and that will be provided. Are there any questions?
So you identified that there's interest in parents, graduate students are parents, and also those who have spouses or partners. Is there any, maybe this isn't a widespread need, but perhaps resources for students who are having to take care of a elderly parent or having to go through that sort of a part of the life cycle, as it were?
We haven't addressed it directly. It wasn't a GCCI document. So I'm thinking that this would hopefully fall into something that the focus group is working on, in that it's the way that your academic program has changed when you're caring for someone else. So the whole thrust of the focus group is trying to acknowledge that there is this overlap between academic study and personal life that can't necessarily be separated. So what are the ways that you deal with that? How do you deprioritize? How do you restructure your program? How do you talk to advisors in a way that kind of keeps you competitive, but also really acknowledges that it's almost a different race that you're running? Mm-hmm. So it would, I think that there is space for that to also kind of factor into what we're trying to do.
Thank you. You mentioned the Child Care Grant Program. I was wondering if you could say a few more words about that. What it is and how well you've been able to meet the needs of the
parent program. That was the first thing you can it's a couple of $1,000. I think you have to be eligible, you have to be making less than $65,000 a year. You apply for it. I think in August, and then you only get the award in December, so it's kind of a time lapse which you have to take into account. And it's just a small contribution, right? And I think depending on your daycare situation, it might cover a couple of months of daycare. So it's just something that it is that you want to not do account, but I don't think it's sufficient.
Is it right to say that rent is much higher for childcare?
I'm not too sure. I think it was quite challenging.
Yeah, for right to
It was 1960 this year. It was 1500.
should be more proportion to actually what they need, because staff usually get higher salaries than grad students.
Yes, it should. And the another issue is that the Cornell Basic Center offers raised faculty members on the sizing grant, but not to graduate students. So there's another way in which our faculty admit that graduate students can't. So it's something that is of interest. And I think over a number of years, we've seen some workforce changing that, but it hasn't been a lot of success. So it's kind of ongoing. I have a couple things to ask that too. One is that the employee healthcare grant is actually tax-free, whereas graduate students who get the grant are expected to pay taxes on it. The second thing is actually that students who have spouses who are not employed full-time are ineligible for this grant, basically the assumption being that if your partner is not working, then they can provide the healthcare. What that usually means is an international student whose spouse, because of the visa status, isn't able to work. And so they're surviving with kids and a single graduate student income, which I think is just absurd. But yeah.
Yeah, thanks very much for your response.
Well, we have no more questions. Thank you so much.
Okay, and next we have Corza and Adrian Powell, and they're going to talk about their trip to the AGPS Legislative Action Day.
Role playing that we did, and I will point out actually the first point, which dealt with, the first presentation dealt with working with your federal relations staff. And so if any of you are interested in doing any sort of advocacy on behalf of graduate students or in the context of Cornell or university-related issues, I would definitely encourage you to contact Cornell Government Relations staff. The people at the federal office, Diane Miller and Karen DeParco, were incredibly supportive. They actually walked us to all our meetings. I'm sure we would have been on time if they hadn't been with us to help guide us through that. And they actually sat with us in the meetings. They certainly gave us the freedom to make our case as we felt it was appropriate. But just having them there for support was invaluable. So this is just more of the issues that UNAEPS was advocating for. Funding graduate education, particularly graduate research. So the NIH-CNSF has their budget. They're still at a loss in real terms relative to fiscal year 2010. So the NIH-CNSF is pushing for undoing that arm and hopefully increasing funding going forward. The humanities and the art, I'm a little less familiar with it, but the Javits Fellowships were actually consolidated with the GAN, the Graduate Assistance in Areas of National Need. And of course, that consolidation, there was a 25% reduction in funding as well. That's the problem, and many people want to see that undone. And then there's another point in there, but political science funding to the NSF. Basically, the NSF used to give out grants to political science. The envelope sending legislation was passed last year. One of the senators ensured there was language in there that required the NSF director to justify any grant to political science as being in the interest of national security or having direct national economic benefits. The practical result of that is the NSF no longer gets their grants in political science. And so the next area is open access to research. So the way you train this is if you've had the experience of finding exactly the paper that you need, it has all the information you need, you click on it and you get a payroll. It can be incredibly frustrating. And this is that in the context of graduate students, but it's much broader issue in that this affects the general public as well. So much of this research is only funded by the taxpayers, through the NSF, through the NIH, for example. And it seems somehow inappropriate that they shouldn't have access to the results of that research. So the NIH put in place a policy in 2008 that required, after a 12-month embargo period, required researchers to make their article or their results available through the NIH database. And this has been an extremely successful policy in terms of ensuring that the results of taxpayer funded research are open and accessible. There is legislation in place, so there are policies that have been directed. Now the push is to codify this into law to make sure that it's actually mandatory and that it applies to all federal granting agencies. And so the NHTS is supporting HR 708 and S350. Seems like there could be some good progress there. Both of those have co-sponsors from both the Democrat and the Republican, so there's good bipartisan support for that. So,
okay, and the next issue was regarding student loans for graduate and professional students. I know Nicole talked about this a bit. We did have a day for the Call Congress event that grads had that too campaign, so this is also on the legislative agenda. There was a Budget Control Act, and I think the year has slipped my mind. Was it 2011? 2010? Well, what happened was we were told that in order to free up some money to be able to offer more Pell Grants to undergraduate students with needs, they had to make changes to the rules for graduate and professional student money. So they said they were working with a fixed amount of money, and this was the solution that they came up with. So graduate professional students can face higher lifetime interest rates, and they no longer have access to a subsidy during their training. So that's called the subsidized chaperone loan that graduate professional students, for the first time this year, can no longer access that. So as soon as you start your training, you start paying interest on the money that you borrowed from the government. So the ask to Congress was to reinstate the subsidy for graduate professional students and also reunify the interest rate. So it was a small ask just to kind of undo the damage that was done through that budget control act. And I have an animation so you can see this. So these are just some types of statistics. The NABCS gave us what they call these signs. I call them fact sheets. They were really nice colored, one-page leave behinds with references on the back that were really nice to leave with legislative assistants and correspondents. So we have those as one PDF packet, and we'll send them to someone on the executive board to share with you in an email. Can you get the next slide? So I can't field questions on immigration reform, but it definitely was something on the legislative agenda. So I'm just going to show you guys a couple of the specific asks. The first is about domestic revalidation of student visas. Could you hit the animation, please? So S visas are a particular type of student visa that don't qualify for domestic revalidation. And I know I've heard anecdotally from international students, but this is a huge pain. But it depends on the country, and I know it's very complicated, but this was the ask to make you qualify for domestic revalidation. And if you have the next slide, please. And also, there was a request to just increase the number of visas and green cards that are available to people who train here and receive advanced degrees. And here are some of the pretty convincing statistics that over a third of all science and engineering degrees a couple years ago were awarded to foreign nationals. So it's really about retaining intellectual capital in the United States. Okay. The animation again, please. So we had a full day of meetings. We were hit with a really large snowstorm that Monday, so our first day of meetings was canceled. But it was great because Adrian and I were able to get together and role play and really strategize on which issues we were going to touch with which Congress people. In the morning, we met with a congresswoman from West Virginia. Ann came down with influenza. She was not able to join us, but she's a really nice woman, and she promised to represent our cause in Congress, so that was great. We were supposed to meet with Congressman Emanuel Cleaver. Missouri is my home state. That actually got backed up. But we did meet with Congressman Tom Reed and Congressman, I'm sorry, actually we didn't meet with any of the Congress people. We met with legislative assistants and legislative correspondents. So there should be an office of, in parentheses, in front of all of these. We were supposed to meet with Congressman Gibson because he's a Cornell graduate, but it didn't happen. So. In the afternoon, we met with congressmen from Missouri and one senator from New York and two senators from Missouri. So we thought we had a really successful day. We got really good feedback and a really receptive audience. So if you guys have any questions, we'd like to share some resources with you that Adrian's going to explain to you, and then we can take questions.
Yeah, and just to add, that snowstorm, most of our meetings that we had on Monday were actually rescheduled to Tuesday. Again, all thanks to Ben and other internal part of our program. They're amazing. So we were able to meet with everyone that we initially were supposed to meet with, just about. So these are a few resources. The purpose of our report is to encourage engagement.
Every fall and every spring, so there will be another opportunity as soon as October in this year.
So these are some resources that we found pretty useful in preparing for our meeting. I don't know so much about Congress app and Papa, because they're smartphone apps, but Thomas and GovTrack are pretty useful websites. If there's any sort of legislation that you are interested in, you can track that legislation, its progress through those two websites. And also, if you need find out who your representative is, what committees they sit on, how they voted on different bills, impact on loans, or tonight's gather plot of various representatives. There's like ideology on one axis and seniority on the other, so you can find out all sorts of interesting tidbits of them. Thanks.
Yes, so hit the
mute button until it's green. Okay, there.
Dave, so I had a question about open access in terms of, so I do a lot of animal behavior stuff, and so within the like ecology and ethology community, there's a lot of sort of pushback to open access because it's not just clicking on a link to see a paper, but it's also a lot of, it includes making your raw data set available when you publish, and someone can use your entire data set without having to cite you or put you as an author on your stuff. And so that's, for someone who does behavioral work with animals, it takes a long time to do your data, or to get it out, but the idea that you would have to actually publish that and someone could use that is extremely detrimental to people that are like graduate students and also junior faculty, like people that are at a level trying to sort of, be successful. I'm just wondering like what side of that, you know, in terms of advocating for this, it could be detrimental to some fields.
So I don't think that open access actually captures that. So my understanding is that raw data is a great issue from open access. I mean, that certainly is something that's happening, and I think the NSF requires all your raw data currently. You have to have the plan to call it, but you have to
take it. I don't know if that's curious, so, I mean, it might depend on what you should be.
Yeah.
You don't have to do it right away.
Okay, you said it's not a part of
this,
and I think you just said you have to do it.
You already have to do it. I mean, this relates to published research, so your articles, your journal articles, okay? That's a separate issue. I think that's not already used to NSF policy. And I'm pretty sure people will tell you to cite you, even if you do your raw data. You have to cite people.
Well, it's not, I guess, I have to say that you wouldn't necessarily be an author on someone that can take your entire data set and run it.
Right. Well, this legislation doesn't necessarily relate to that. I could give you my personal opinion, but it's not worth too much usually. I'm all for sharing information.
Okay.
So that's fine.
So we have time for one more question. We'll have to move on. You guys can email them later.
She had her hand up first.
Can you go over what the dream is?
No.
We have these signs that we will give, you'll get through email that have references with them, and you know, other than what I read in the news, I can't.
Pass it to
the
basically it provides passes of future for illegal immigrants or people with a green card. And that's a major concern for a lot of particularly people who came here when they were very young, their parents who came illegally, but have for all intents and purposes lived in the United States their entire lives, but don't have access to a lot of the same like resources and education, et cetera, that the typical U.S. citizen might. So it's a major issue for like higher education in general, and in fact, from LC, it's a pretty strong thing as well.
Okay, so I'll ask you to follow up with them afterwards via email if you have other questions. So thank you so much, Cora and Adrian. Okay, at this time we're going to bring before you our graduate student elected trustee, Derek Evanson, and he's going to talk about the changes that have recently taken place. And I apologize, there is a table here on the agenda, so we'll shoot free for 20 minutes. So if there are no objections, we're going to go ahead and let him go until 6:20.
Hopefully I shouldn't be speaking for long at all, but I wanted to bring forth a topic that
the grants were awarded from the GPFA leadership back in fall, and then this had to go through various levels of administrative approval throughout the university, and it's part of the university budget, and so it was released when the university budget was publicly released a few days ago. So I just wanted to brief you on it. This might be something you want to take back to your field, particularly if you're in graduate school, for the professional school, something that affects graduate students. So I'll give you some background on it, and hopefully you can take some questions. Background is, so every year, graduate stipend rates change. This year, the way in which they change was slightly different than, or it's different than the way that they changed previously. So previously, for the last several decades, the increase in minimum stipend rates was the same for all students. Let's go on there, please. So this year, was a change in that the increase was 2.7% for teaching assistants. That's a similar rate increase that we've seen in previous years for teaching assistants. And it was 0.0 for research assistants. This is the first time that we've seen, in several decades at least, that we've seen this difference between teaching and research assistants. And so, I'm saying, I had conversations with Barbara about this, and I would say that I expect to see this difference grow over the next several years. Based on conversations about the administration, based on the rationale for this change, it would make sense that I'll show the next slide talking about the rationale, but that if I would not be surprised to see the research assistants held at 0% increase and the teaching assistants get increased in some years going forward. Or to see they may not get as much as this year, but to see the difference grow. So these are some, in our conversations that we've had with the administration, some of the things that we've been told. So one of the rationales for implementing this change was that some faculty, they have to be able to pay their students less in real dollars. No, there's not actually a reduction in stipend rate, but holding a constant while the other stipend rate is increasing. So to pay the students less to increase competitiveness for grant funding. If you're a faculty member and you're putting in a grant, someone at the University of Michigan is putting in a grant and they pay their grad students less, the idea that you can be more competitive if you're also paying your grad students less. So some other factors related to this is that the appropriate peer group for comparison, it may not, is believed by the University Administration, may not be the same for arts and science, arts and humanities versus the sciences. And there's also contention that often humanities students are get funded by the TAs and science students by RAs. So there's some belief that the IB Plus group of schools may be a better peer group for comparison for arts and sciences students, whereas flagship state schools may be a better peer group for comparison for the science students. And so these numbers aren't in any way necessarily benchmarking or relating to what the stipends are or will be for Cornell students, but just as an example to show Ivy schools are generally paying more in a range for 9 months of citizenship than a sample of some flagship state schools that we compare Cornell to the administration. And so this, but does therefore Cornell unlikely to pay some students less and still remain competitive in recruitment and yield? So this is a contention we've heard in the conversations about this issue. So grad student reaction. There's been a few grad students that have been involved in this conversation over the time since October when we've been having this conversation. So we have two grad students on the General School Committee. I believe one of them will be part of the conversation about this issue. The individual who was part of it expressed some opposition to the issue. GPFA leadership was consulted and spoken to on this issue. That would be the executive leadership. They expressed opposition. Asked for additional consultation with graduate students on this issue. That has not happened to this point. And then that would be me, the third bullet point. I expressed my opposition, along with the GPFA leadership expressed
my interest in additional consultation. And I voted against the university budget for the first time ever, and I'm voting against the university budget in January. And then it was due to the announcement was made public this last Thursday. And so some of the concerns that I have and some of the other GPS leaders have about this issue, and you know, this is one of the folks who have discussed the issue between last Thursday when it became public and today, is that faculty are, these are striking at minimum. So faculty are allowed to pay more than the minimum. We, those of us who have been involved in the conversation do not believe that this is something that will happen often. This is something that's allowed currently. The current rates are also minimal. In some departments, for example, engineering, some departments choose to pay more due to competitiveness, but that doesn't happen a lot throughout the university. And this is something that some of us believe, and this is a conversation we can have, you know, that this is just an assertion. But some of us believe that different rates across different students, potentially within the same department, having different rates within the same office layout, and across the university as well, could cause their contention, damage collaboration between grad students, also between grad students and faculty. So that's one of the concerns that the students have had. A few procedural issues concerned us about the process. And one was that there wasn't a lot of attention in the conversation that we had early on, which you know, we are thankful that we had those conversations that we were included in that process, from the elected leader. But little attention given explicit to graduate student well-being. One thing that was considered was the percentage of graduate students that they have that leave the university with debt. I think it was concerned whether that the only metric or the most appropriate metric for looking at whether graduate students would experience financial hardship from this change. But there is a provision for data collection moving forward on this issue. So as it continues forward, looking at whether graduate students on exit surveys, for example, are reporting different levels compared to current levels of satisfaction related to this. And so, I mentioned previously, but another concern we had was that we were hoping that more students would be included in providing feedback. I've been a trustee for 4 years. I was a student trustee. I was in Monet's position the year before that. I don't think any of you were even in the room then. But this is...
I was.
Oh, Nicole, yeah. I'm in full of cross stadium, of course. Can't see models. This is... For me, I think I've seen some sort of pay benefits concerns come go, and this is due to the number of students, essentially the fact that this is one of the most major changes, if not the major change that I've seen in the last 7 years in GPS. And so, this is just some data to give you on what the rates would be next year. This is everything that I told you, it's just the actual numbers here as well. But I'm hoping that we can have a conversation and knock it down back over there. You know, anyone who's been involved in this conversation. Can chat about it. But if you have questions or about this change that I went through pretty quickly, or if you have some initial thoughts, I think this is a conversation that we'll probably be having going forward over the next few months, next year. The administration will need to decide next by next January what they want to do with the rates. And so I think it behooves the GPSA to have a message that they can share the representation of the graduate and professional student community. It's mostly the graduate school issue on what to feel about this issue going forward.
Okay, lots of hands. Yes.
I'm curious about one of the major rationales it seemed was peer institutions. These different groups. And I'm curious if the provisions for data collection moving forward has included any such tracking of those sorts of numbers. That, you know, the differences between the IB Plus and the state groups. Also interested in whether the IB Plus and the state groups have, so I know we're only in tracking like half of who they're paying each, but I'm wondering if this discrepancy is something that they're instituting as well.
So The impression I have from our youth, when you find yourself, is there are peer institutions that have this policy currently, that they bifurcate rates between different types of stipends. And so I think Barb mentioned to me that there are, we were looking at 9 peer institutions when we looked at the study, and that 3 of them had the same rates, 3 of them had different rates, and then, so there's, I don't know, probably happening now. So there are schools that do it, and there are schools that don't do it, and I think there's a little bit more sure what they're doing. So it's not that there aren't other schools that are having this rate, and there are schools that are going the opposite direction, too. In a conversation I was having with one of my colleagues at Stanford, she mentioned that they used to have a larger bifurcation between rates, and they've decreased that over the years. And so I think I don't know what the rationale are for why other schools operate the way they are, but there's a range of approaches.
The other thing is that the grad school actually does now is starting to collect a lot more data about not only current students, but students that were admitted but failed to attend. So we have, we will have going forward, I think, better information about the reasons why people chose to come to Cornell versus other schools. So that's so that question of data, at least there is data to work from.
Okay, and Alex?
Yeah, so looking at this, it seems to be only half the picture, because, you know, grad student tuition is, I think, more than stipend levels, and also there, like in previous years, we discussed the fact that Cornell doesn't reduce the amount of tuition for late-stage graduate students. So is there any discussion about the competitiveness of Cornell applying for grants and tuition taken into account, or possibly discounting tuition as postgrad student stipends?
Maybe Cornell was or signed to us. I mean, there's discussions that have been ongoing. I don't think there's been a firm decision on that issue yet.
Yeah, I think at this point that's probably, you know, just discussion. There's nothing, you know, that we should really discuss in terms of that. So maybe more information at once.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe Barb or Jan, well, you know, someday in the future, you know, I mean, as that discussion goes forward, maybe they'll have an update for us, but I know they have been, you know, considering the tuition policy, and, you know, particularly as it relates to late-stage graduate students.
But just in terms of the budget, pretty much entirely grad student stipend levels as opposed to tuition?
Jan?
Thank you.
graduate students, but within graduate students for doctoral students, but or also master's students. And when you say late stage, people in their late stage curriculum, is that also for only doctoral students or master's students?
So what's going on with this is it relates to anyone who's on these types of a citizenship. So teaching citizenship, graduate citizenship. This is a citizenship category, and this is a citizenship category, but very few students in them. The legitimate designation, funding designation, but really the vast majority of this 1135 for research citizenship, and the vast majority of the 962 students who graduate citizenship or TA. That's anyone who's serving in that capacity. So that doesn't matter if you're master's, doesn't matter if you're PhD, although a lot of professional student masters who are paying their own tuition, they may not be on any funding category. So it's just people that are receiving citizenship. In terms of the other conversations, so this doesn't play anyway to early stage, late stage. But in terms of the other conversation about tuition, which is the information report coming, relating to late stage, that I think that's more like after your fifth year or something, like later on, so it wouldn't really apply to masters.
If you could just clarify that when you're talking about graduate
students.
Yeah.
Okay, one more question.
Okay, so where is the extra money that the university would be retaining by using the rate going? Number one. And number two, is part of the logic behind this the conception that RAs have better access to grants and external funding than TAs do?
I'm not sure, the second part of your question, I'm not sure that's something that's considered this. The university is not actually, my understanding, really retaining any money here. It's more individual faculty members who have, they secure the grants, and they're bringing on a researcher. It's just less of that grant in real life, $1,000 has to be used to pay the graduate student. And so I think one of the primary rationales was faculty members could be more competitive for grants. And I'm trying to be very diplomatic about this. You can read my article on the Sun today if you're interested in
in a little
more detail. Is there a lot of competition right now? No, the competition is really granted. I think the concern is that if I'm a faculty member here and I'm competing against for a grant, something like that, NIH, whatever, I'm competing against a faculty member who's at an institution where they have to pay their graduate students a lower stipend amount, then I would have to, for the same research, I would have to submit a grant that asks for more money than some of my fields who submitted grants at another institution. So I think that was one of the rationales that some faculty members asked for sort of relief from the rate that they were coming to pay.
I can just jump in there. So kind of reiterate that faculty members were the primary reason we were given for this source of consideration to start. This information was shared with DGSs, and I would encourage you to continue the conversation potentially with your DGS, as they will have the most influence potentially on how it is implemented in your department.
I've heard from some faculty members in certain departments that they plan to make sure that they're paying everyone at the TA rate. And so within a department, you can make that sort of decision. I mean, you have to allocate department funds, that sort of thing. For example, there's some department that, your first 2 to 3 years, you're only doing teaching citizenship, and then after that, you're only doing research citizenship. That's sort of a structural way of handling the department. And so for the faculty members in those sort of departments, for example, well, that doesn't really make sense to, you have to pay a decrease than if you became further on in the program.
So we'll definitely take more questions offline, and we have to be, and also this is going to be an ongoing discussion, and We hope to look into providing tools to help you talk to your department, so we'll be coming to you with more follow-up in the next meeting. But thank you, Derek, for that update. And also for advocating for graduate students. So we appreciate that. Next, we're going to do our committee updates, and we'll ask that you, keep them to a minute, so I'll put this over to the tech board. I just want to mention next meeting will be electing voting members, so for those of you who aren't currently voting members or might be interested, please feel free to reach out to the tech board if you have questions about the role, or reach out to maybe a current voting member to ask them more about their role. That's the main plug I want to put in there. Again, if you're interested, please feel free to reach out to us. We'd like to get you more information.
So, external committees, Nicolette and me was an example of sort of good work that our members do in our external committees, and we're doing a really great job of keeping these committees. Last meeting, I think I remember, Jack LMA came to advertise the financial literacy committee, and thank you for Christy and Marissa for being graduate members on that. Since that time, we've had another external committee added for the GCMC member, which is now a new council on hazing prevention, run by Gannett. And this committee is going to be charged with working on the prevention, intervention, response to hazing at Cornell. And I can forward that charge to members after this meeting, I think, if any of you or anyone else can feel like
interested. Okay.
I would just encourage you also to be thinking of, if you are not going to be here next year in the GCSA, who might represent your field here at the GCSA next year, or if you have friends in other fields who would love to come here and talk to us, we'd like to have them.
Thank you. Appropriations?
So, Enron, we're going to address the one resolution on part of the appropriations committee, but for now, I just thought let you know that I did pass on the update to Ingrid Vaughn and to the Athletic Commission. And so Chris Porter from the Ingrid Vaughn to thank us for considering that those funds. So, and I have not heard back from the Athletic. So.
Okay, thank you.
Communications?
GPSA Bus should be coming out within the next week or two, so if you have any information that you'd like to be included in the bus, looking at new committee chairs, let me know.
Thank you. I'm Commissioner Gaines out of town. I don't think you left anything. Okay, student programming. Sorry, student for your pooling.
Okay. So I've been saying for quite a while now that Grad Ball is coming out April 26th. It's going to be at Museum of the Earth. And I just wanted to tell you how awesome this event is going to be. It's 7 to 11. We have karaoke shuttle buses that will take people up from College Town downtown and take them to the Museum of the Earth. And DJ Elton Sounds, who will be playing, I haven't heard him play, but he does a lot of Cornell events. It will be catered by Baba. There's a little movie theater in the museum, and we're going to play Jurassic Park and the Indiana Jones thing. You can walk around the museum while the event is going on, and and then we have a lovely poster. Tickets are on sale for $20. We finally got the site up and running, so there's a tiny URL for CU Gradball 2014, and also a QR code is in the bottom right. So if you have that app, you can just go online with your phone and find the tickets. Tickets should be on sale now and until April 26th. So, please come, tell people
why it should be really awesome. Thanks, Anne. Okay, advocacy, training,
Yeah, hello. First of all, sorry for all those emails we got about the cancellation of the deadlines and the rescheduling and so forth, but we had about 65 people or so show up last Monday. I think that was pretty good. We had a great conversation. We haven't gone through all the notes yet, so I can't tell you what was the prominent topic that people talked about, which was the most answered question, but I think we're moving forward from here, and I think we got a pretty good start on getting some policy through. So more when the report comes out.
Okay, thanks, Brian. Adrian?
Yeah, so the nomination period is continuing apace. We have a little under 2 weeks left. We have some strong candidates, but we would like more. So I will probably be sending an email out to you in a few days. You could send that out to your respective fields. That would be great as a reminder. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So what, like, if someone wants to send in a nomination, what should that
It should be a letter expressing why you feel they are a strong candidate. So on the website, which is www.lgbtsa.com, there's a list of the various criteria that we consider. Feel free to include anything, personal anecdotes, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Adrian. Okay, we'll move on to new business. So,
I'm reporting for Shauna too, so unfortunately I will be here tonight. So at our last meeting, which was 2 weeks ago from yesterday, we talked about two resolutions we're looking to write. One is about addressing diversity among faculty, trying to keep it on par with the diversity of the student body. The second resolution is we're looking at is addressing looking at reevaluation of the resolution that the student assembly came to talk to us about earlier this semester about requiring graduate teaching assistants to take the sensitivity training respect to Cornell. We have some reservations about the effectiveness of that training program, as well as the requirement of making graduate teaching assistants take it without having some sort of requirement of undergraduate students. The third thing we talked about was establishing a travel grant award for diversity students. So this is for a travel grant for students to help students go to conferences. The requirements for that would be on par with the requirements for the diversity fellowships that are currently being awarded by the graduate school. So requirements such as being part of underrepresented ethnicity, overcoming hardships, et cetera. So those would be the requirements that we would be looking to implement.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Okay, now we're going to business. So first up, Resolution 10, and Dan is out of town, so Zion is going to show briefly for the book of veto that one. Again, she presented it on last time, but since we are updating the charter, we need to vote on this.
Yeah, so Dan is in India, but since last time, just to review why he felt this particularly important resolution, because there's a lot of information lost when terms switch over the summer, because often the preceding chair is graduating. And as someone who preserved on the finance commission last year with Dan, and also with him at the meetings with the students, the student affairs office at the beginning of the year with the start of ORCFIC, there's continuing to be a lot of changes happening to ORCFIC. As for those of you who might be familiar with the system, there's a lot of problems with how approvals get put through, after the comment section. So definitely by changing the terms to happen in the middle of the semester would allow the current chair to train alongside the next chair, and therefore preserve the commission loss that has happened during the summer period.
Okay, thank you, Zion. We'll open the floor. Yes, Ian. Oh, okay. So it's the Appropriations Committee instead of Finance Commission. Are there any objections? Seconded. Are there any objections to making that update from appropriations to Finance Commission? If not, we will make that committee. Okay, so removing committee, is there a second to that?
Second.
Are there any objections to that? If not, that update will be made, and that's all that Derek has made up.
I was in this role like 6.5 years ago, and it's a great change. We did things like pencil and paper back then, literally, like not on the computer, but it's even more recent change. Good stuff. I call a question.
Objection. I submitted a bunch of gradual changes. Oh, they got lost in the minutes. So I'm going to do it live.
Okay, well, I'll let you go through them all, and we'll look at it.
I got most of them, but the most important one, I just moved to amend. Thanks.
Okay,
26 now. It says remunerating, which means repaying, as opposed to remunerating, which means renumbering. So I move for replacing remunerating with remunerating.
Okay.
That was the one that was like content as opposed to like punctuation.
Okay, so is there a second for that? Are there any objections to making that update? If not, go ahead with your grammatical one.
I don't no longer have a newspaper, so I'll just have to let go. Sorry.
Okay. And anyone else have to see your hand?
Is there enough substantive changes? Maybe we can just make them offline.
Okay, we'll go ahead, and if no one else has anything else to say or questions on that, we'll call the question. Okay, so all those who are voting in favor of this, approving this resolution, to raise your green placards and keep up, Okay. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Okay. All those who are opposed. So the resolution will pass 13-0. Okay, and now we'll move on to the next. We had another one from last week too that we have to go over this week. So this involves changing the bylaws and the charter. So resolution 11, so that's Ryan again.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ian. If you just want to quickly, just in case someone wasn't in your last seat.
Okay, so this resolution, we are required to update the obligation and criteria for groups that receive finance funding. And so it's reached that time, and we're basically doing that with this resolution. So there was a document which was sent around showing the existing obligation, and there are some amendments that need to happen which are small changes, and a couple of one major update is that the Vicarage Barn asked to be relieved of an obligation to provide food on a monthly basis to that. That's a significant cost to them, and they're undergoing some infrastructural improvements in this next cycle. So we would relieve them of that temporarily, and then for the athletics group, they have been providing 253 tickets. Oh, at least holding 250 tickets for the men's and hockey, and in the current obligation, we're going to create 200, so I propose to update that.
Okay, we'll open the floor. Todd?
I've got a minor amendment.
Okay.
Resolved D1A and D1C. I'm just confused. This is dramatic thing. So we're replacing D1A upgrade with maintaining. I'm not sure if in its original case upgrade was a verb or a noun, but if it's the verb, it should be maintained, and if it's a noun, it should be meaning.
Okay, Ian, did you have any?
The same thing in B1, the add presumably there is a verb, so it should be inserting maintain as opposed to maintaining.
I assume that would be correct. I'll have to go back to the version.
Okay, so for both one, for both B1A and B1C, you're proposing
placing maintaining with
maintaining. Okay, is there a second for that? Friendly, okay. And then so, see, we are looking at changing for B1A and B1C, maintaining with maintain. Are there any objections to making that change? Okay, if not, we'll go ahead and we will make it. I'm sorry?
We just see the original document that's actually being amended. Does anyone double check that?
Or she just, didn't you just have it uploaded?
Before we amend.
I believe Liz just had it. Did you just have it uploaded?
Well, a lot of languages don't have the damn form, you know?
By the way, I'm sending an allocation to you.
Yeah.
Back.
There's someone who's there because we're not split.
Yeah. Where is the eligibility criteria?
It should be, this is nominal obligation. It should be on page 7.
Sorry, the eligibility criteria, go back to page
7.
There you go, that one.
Yeah, it's the first appendix A,
section
A01.
Very popular. Hold on.
Started a committee to look into an open access database or foreign law publications, so if anyone here is interested, talk to me after the meeting. The second one is a vote on TCAP-related issues. So basically, we're voting to either approve or reject revoking the first-year free bus pass. As a result of, again, I don't have time to talk about all the details, so if you have a question, you can talk to me after. But basically, Cornell has increased their payment to TCAP in quite some time, and so they need money from Cornell somehow. And this was the way that it was decided to do that. So if you have questions about that, again, please talk to me. We're simply discussing these resolutions tomorrow and not voting on them. So there is some time if there are objections.
Okay, thank you, David. Anyone else for perform?
I am collecting signatures for a petition that was put to me as the graduate trustees student trustee to be on that ballot, and it needs 250 signatures, so I'd like to pass the petition around if that's okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ann. Any other candidates? Look for the green light. Hit the mute button until it comes on.
So I'm the representative from ILA, and I sent out an email about our ILA Union Day, and there's a social justice career fair associated for this. So I emailed it to the DTSC assembly, so if you could pass it on to all of your students, it would be very useful to all people.
Thank you. Anyone else for open forum? Okay, if not,
motion
to adjourn. Okay,
this has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.